This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The headlines. Yemen's Houthi militants launched new attack on UAE as conflict widens. This is within the last hours. The UAE was attacked by Houthis using ballistic missiles following the attack last week using drones. The Houthis are a rebellious group in Yemen. However, they are a subset of the Iranian regime. They are surrogates, much the same way Hezbollah are surrogates. The UAE was out of this conflict, entered again, and is now being targeted. The airport, the oil facilities, the whole of the UAE's infrastructure. I welcome Malcolm Hohnlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations, and my colleague, Thaddeus McCotter of American Greatness. Thaddeus, you have a question about the UAE strike. Good evening to both of you.
Good evening, Malcolm. It's clear the Iranian proxies, the Houthis, are becoming a regional threat, aren't they?
They absolutely are. You know, we've discussed it several times in recent months to try to get people to pay attention to what they're doing and what the threat that they represent. And we know that the Houthis have shown now that they can launch ballistic missiles at Saudi Arabia, as they did this weekend, that they can launch missiles at the UAE, as they did this weekend. They are facing internal struggles where they are losing some of their positions within the country, within Yemen itself, to the forces backed by the Saudi Arabia and the UAE. But they are able to stop, you know, flights into Abu Dhabi International Airport. They can hit oil refineries in the UAE. And they are moving in the region to become a regional threat, modeled probably on the basis of our friends in Hezbollah. So the Houthi leaders themselves represent a new kind of threat to the region. And because their missiles can target the countries in the region and have a 930-mile range with their new drones, which can hit Israel as well, supplied by Iran, but also, we believe, being assembled there directly. So it represents a much bigger threat than just simply the internal battle within Yemen. It's become a regional conflict, and they don't seem to have any intention of letting up.
Malcolm, we go to Vienna because where Iran is now pressing the case on the reawakened, if possible, JCPOA of 2015. The reporting these last days is that Russia has proposed an interim nuclear deal. What does it look like, and what is the expectation that Russia will press on this matter while the world is focused on Ukraine?
A very good point that the world is diverted rightfully to the concerns, the most immediate concerns, China, the Ukraine. In the meantime, these quiet talks are going along quietly and not very well from what I can see. Many officials in the U.S. have told us that there is really no progress. The United States obviously is not a direct party. But we've seen statements from some important Iranian officials saying that this new government has made clear that all the sanctions should be lifted, that all sanctions have to be removed. And there are various proposals, including the one that came from the Russians, reportedly from the Russians, that would involve taking back the excess enriched uranium, the current stockpile perhaps, the stuff that's 60% purity, and perhaps sending it to Russia. In exchange, Iran would get access to billions of dollars in oil revenues frozen in the bank accounts, including in South Korea. It was supposed to have a six-month duration and stipulates that Iran would get additional sanctions relief for each extension and $10 billion in sanctions relief from assets that would be unfrozen in Japan, Iraq, South Korea. We already saw the first example of this when South Korea paid Iran's UN dues with $18 million in frozen funds with the United States' agreement. Now, this Tehran has not been able to vote at the UN. They've not been able to, their role has been limited because they haven't paid their dues. Now, we bailed them out, and Iran can now fully participate and vote. And, you know, it's never in our interest to have them do so on any issue that is of concern to us. So the Iranians now are saying we're going to reject any proposal that isn't a full deal, where there isn't full sanctions relief. Whether this is posturing or not, we will know. But They are saying that they will they want full sanctions relief in exchange for some partial restrictions that they would reimpose. But the problem is they already have the knowledge now. So you can take away the enriched uranium, but they can replace that immediately. They have made advances on ballistic missiles, on weapons, on weaponization, and on enrichment uranium. You cannot take that back.
Malcolm, did I hear correctly? South Korea paid Iran's dues? Is that?
Yep. $18 million.
Thaddeus,
delivered to the UN.
Does this make any sense, Thaddeus? South Korea?
It just goes to show the desperation of the Biden administration to try to breathe life back into the corpse that is the Vienna talks. And the fact that Iran continues to violate the proposed sanctions, they violated them even under the Obama administration, we continue to see a desperate Democratic administration trying to place their own diplomatic diplomatic laurels ahead of international security.
And remember, it shows us that they didn't have the money themselves to pay it because they want to be able to use the UN as a platform, and to lose its voting rights there is really an embarrassment to them on the global scale. And here it shows that while they couldn't pay it now, and Guterres had issued a letter to them and it listed the countries that were so far behind in the dues that they were declared the world's worst deadbeats. And Iran was only after Venezuela in the list.
And this is not the first time that the U.S. has acquiesced in this, because I believe they did so last summer.
Puzzled then. Iran is commanding sanctions be lifted. Iran is having people pay its dues, something like the Tom Sawyer story. Somebody paint the fence for me. And Russia is proposing an interim deal for Iran. Iran looks to be in control of this, Malcolm. Where else is Iran in control? What about Syria?
Well, there isn't Syria, but I just want to say on this that they are playing up, the Iranians are playing up the visit that he made to Russia, where you see to visit Putin, and how they are now going to work together, and they specifically cite in OPEC that this will strengthen Russia's negotiating position now that Iran and Russia are working together. Now, think what that means at a time now of the energy crisis to have Russia and Iran working together. In Syria, we have a number of issues right now, but the most prominent is that Kurdish-led the Syrian Democratic Forces, helped by U.S. troops or backing, are trying to retake control over the largest prison holding ISIS suspects, about 3,000 of them. ISIS carried out an attack on it. They killed a number of soldiers. They killed a number of the guards, as well as now the prisons. A number of the prisoners have been killed. This is one of a network of these prisons that Kurds, PKK, guard. The ISIS fighters stormed it. Barracks in the Iraq mountains almost simultaneously, and we were seeing the renewed action where they went in and killed soldiers in this place, but they are being active on various fronts. So those who thought ISIS was dead were wrong. So far, 70 inmates have been killed, as reported, and 17 or 20 of the forces of the Kurds. And this is and the U.S. has confirmed that the coalition carried out airstrikes in support of the Syrian Democratic Forces trying to retake the prison. But just think of these 3,000 inmates, many of them considered amongst the most dangerous ISIS commanders, were to be allowed to get free.
Does this suit Iran's purposes to have the PKK attacked by ISIS marauders?
No, they do not want to see ISIS reassert itself there, because that does not work in Iran's interests. But do they like any disruptions that take place, like they do with the Houthis, like they do with others? Anything that disrupts, they gives them opportunities to assert themselves. And now they are being forced back. We see how a lot of the plans of the Iranians in Syria, and there were some very interesting discussions by the retiring head of the IDF's military intelligence, talking about how the goals that Soleimani had set to create a frozen zone, a zone for fighting near the Israeli border in the Golan Heights. And John, you remember, we've talked about this many times, that was really forced back. And even the Russians gave orders that the Iranians had to back off and not to have a conflict with Russia and Syria. They agreed. So they pulled back their proxies, mostly Shiite militias, but not Hezbollah, and instead they recruited 10,000 local residents, organized them into dozens of local militias under Iranian command. So there are a couple of hundred Iranian officers stationed there, and the militia try to carry out attacks against Israel through the Golan or to collect information, and they're reinforcing their position in Iran in eastern Syria, deploying the proxies and equipping them with more and more advanced weapons as a launch pad for seizing control both of the area and the Iraqi-Syrian border. So Iran, while sitting in Vienna, is in the meantime moving forward, and despite whatever restrictions and attempts to set them back, they maintain a strong foothold in Syria.
We need some good news, Thaddeus.
Yes, you have two good news items, don't you, Malcolm?
Yeah, we search for them. It's not easy. But one is important. An Indonesian delegation was in Israel, supposedly to talk about scientific issues, climate control, other things that... but it certainly sends another message on the diplomatic front that walls or barriers are coming down. I don't think Indonesia is ready to recognize Israel. And, of course, there was criticism of it from within Indonesia. But it's not the first time we believe that there have been contacts. And it's another sign that the iceberg is melting. And the other thing, I mentioned that Khalifa Haftar visited from Libya via Cyprus to Israel for a couple of hours. But Israel and UA just established a joint investment program of almost $100 million, which will be set up funded over the next 10 years on an annual basis to encourage collaboration on technological innovation and help Israeli companies access resources not available in Israel and UAE companies the same. We're seeing Israeli high-tech companies establishing presences and development offices in the UAE. So it's it really deepens and strengthens the collaboration.
Malcolm, about Iran right now, Raisi recently met with Vladimir Putin and his national security apparatus. Do we know anything about those talks? Because suddenly Russia is very active with regard the JCPOA, and Iran is very active getting people to pay its dues. Was that because of the meeting?
The dues was not, but the I do think in the first part is correct that the Russia is the dominant player, wants to be the dominant player. It has increased the naval exercises, military exercises in the region, including with Iran. And the more that the U.S. is out of the region, the more they will step in to fill the void. Fundamentally, Iranians don't trust the Russians. They've had hostile relationships over decades, including from when Russia occupied it at the end of World War II. But they're looking at this at the situation. Russia wants to solidify its hold and the security of the Assad regime in Syria. They see Iran as a problem in that regard. They see Hezbollah facing calls to end Iran's occupation of Lebanon, and they want to see stability there on Syria's borders. There are such a range of issues where their interests conflict and coincide. You know, one of the interesting stories on the side note is the head of the German Navy had to resign because he said that Putin is somebody who should be respected. And this was considered a politicization and an affront, and he was made to resign immediately. And this has to do also with Ukraine and with the accusations that the Russians have made about the fake news in the West, using that term about the likelihood of an invasion. And Russia has called on the Brits in particular to stop engaging in provocations, and the fact that the U.S. and Congress gave approval to fellow NATO states to purchase U.S. weapons to send to the Ukraine. It's all just augmenting the level of conflict and tension.
Malcolm Hohnlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations, Thaddeus McCotter, American Greatness. We're looking for the dusty one. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.